close to a quorum as you get in Washington. So why don't I kick it off and thank everyone for coming. I certainly look forward to the discussion. I'm just going to give a few opening remarks and ask Mike to lay out a little bit of the background on some of the data, and then really kick it over to you all. First of all, I guess I say who I am. I'm Bill Lynn. I'm at the Department of Defense, the Deputy Secretary. I've kind of done a hat trick. I started in Congress with Senator Kennedy. It was terrific being in Congress because you could blame essentially everything on the Department of Defense and the executive branch. That was a comfortable place to be. Then I went to the Department of Defense in the Clinton administration for 8 years and as CFO and Director of Strategic Planning. And that was great because you get to blame Congress. You quickly discover Congress is really the reason for all the problems. I left the department at the end of the Clinton administration, went into private industry, was headed strategic planning for Raytheon. There it's great because you get to blame Congress and the executive branch. You're completely convinced that those are the source of all the problems. Well, now I'm back at the Department of Defense, and I don't know who to blame. So I'm hoping you all will help actually solve the problems rather than find someone to blame. Mike D'Amato here is going to be kind of our expert moderator. Mike is a senior advisor to Jeff Zients and comes with 30 years of experience in the consulting and corporate world. In addition to yourselves, we have several members of the administration. We have Lori Garver, who's the deputy administrator at NASA. Not in the administration, but an important partner, Colleen Kelly, and the longtime head of the National Treasury Employees Union. I don't see John Barry.
He's here. I'm sure he'll show. Yeah,
John is lost. David Ogden, the Deputy Attorney General, is, as happens to us, is over at the White House in an NSC meeting, so I'm not sure. He's going to be back with us, unfortunately. Let me just cover some of the logistics. I asked Andrea. We need someone to report all our great ideas back to the group, and I've asked Andrea to do that. And Mike and I will spend a few minutes with her at the in between. Our session and the break to trying to establish what our great ideas are. The goal here, though, is for, as the president talked about, is for you to really help us stimulate our thinking on how we translate your best ideas, the ideas that were most effective for you and your business, into the government environment. Recognizing that not everything is going to translate directly. The scale is quite different, the structure is quite different, but we really do think there are a lot of commonalities, and that's indeed what we're looking for. As the president mentioned, there was some preparatory work. I think all or almost all of you did it, and I'm going to probably call on some of you to ask you about, this is going to be a little bit like starting with Dan at the beginning. I went to law school. This is going to be a little bit like law school, the Socratic method. It'll be called on to a degree, more to stimulate, although I think with a room full of CEOs, I probably won't have to be stimulating too much. And I see John has now joined us. John Barry is the head of office of personnel management, in case you forgot who you are, John. Let me stop there. I think that's enough of the intro. Let me ask Mike to briefly summarize the results of that homework effort.
Yeah, what I want to do very briefly is just summarize the results of the first part of the homework, where all of you graded, if you will, the different areas. And we're doing that really for one simple purpose, which is to prioritize the order in which we go through topics. So once we get into that, it'll be fairly free form, but that'll help us structure this. As an ex-consultant, I have to have some graphs, but I limited myself to one. So what we have here are your rankings of the topics. And what we did is we weighted them based on 5 points for number one, 3 points for number 2, 1 point for number 3, and just so no one's confused, there's actually no axis, but you get the idea. So anyway, by far the topic that generated the most interest, in fact, I believe with one exception, everyone ranked at number 1, was organizational mandate for change. So that's what we're going to talk about first. Second and third were very close, identifying the right processes to fix and engagement of line managers. So we'll also attempt to get to those two. Just two general comments I'll make, and then we'll get into it. The first is that we have all your homework, and as I've said to several of you, it's extraordinarily useful. And so that will be incorporated into the deliberations we have here. So obviously, to the extent to which something on it is useful in the discussion, we'd love to hear it again. But don't feel that you have to mention it here just to have it involved, because it definitely will be something we'll incorporate. And then secondly, just having done a few of these in my years, as I'm sure a number of you have, these topics are extraordinarily broad. And so it's very easy to have the discussions of them get very general. And so as you're making points and lessons that we should try to learn, which is, of course, the point of this, to the extent to which you can include an example or a technique or a tool or something that will ground the point, that will be incredibly valuable to us. And then last, as Jeff mentioned and as Bill noted, this is just the beginning of the process, and we'll talk more about that when we go back in the main room. So the idea here is to get out ideas that we can begin to incorporate, and then we're also going to try to put together a process to get more granular, to learn more about those from you and from your organizations as follow-up. So this is really, what are the ideas that we should begin to be internalizing in these areas in order to bridge the gap that the president was talking about, which is the gap between what you guys do and what we should be doing. So with that, I'll turn it back to Bill.
Thanks, Mike. I think if I read the schedule right, we have about an hour.
Yes.
And I think the only structure we'll offer is we'll sort of move in order down those four, three, first, three ideas. The only structure I think would be to try and stay on that topic. But if I might, I was going to call on Sal. You identified kind of there was a quote here. We will not fail attitude as critical in your submission there. Do you want to elaborate on that and maybe as Mike suggested, identify kind of where a situation where you thought that really made a difference in your business?
Sure. I think that, right now here at Monster, the company I'm currently running, we went in and there was a culture of stagnation. There was a culture of, it was hard to move things forward. There was a lot of debate, and the best excuse for not getting things done was to CC 40 people on an email. And that gave everybody places to hide, so we didn't have to make progress. If the mandate from the top is, it is a culture of innovation, innovation is rewarded, it is you're really establishing the direction from the top. And you make the room for the debate on which direction you should go, what have you, but there comes a fundamental point in time where decisions have to be made, the direction has been set, and then it's about execution, and then metrics and things to follow up on that execution. And you take it off in bite-sized pieces, if you will, so that you can measure it and you can follow through on it. But I think that setting the right mandate, the attitude, the message from the top, there is the culture, the basic culture of the environment to make those changes is necessary. And sometimes you can't get everyone on the same page. If after the decision's been made and the direction taken, and some people can't get on the same page, maybe some changes have to be made. Now, you don't want to do that too soon. You want differentiating opinions and what have you. So hopefully you come up with the best solutions. But fundamentally, it comes a point in time where the debate stops and you move forward.
If I can add something, I don't think I heard Sal use the word technology once. what you were talking about, getting buy-in, you know, mandate from the top and buy-in. And with all due respect to our president, he focused on technology. And I would try to broaden him out to think about business processes, of which technology is a tool. You know, so you have to get the buy-in, you have to get the direction from the top, you have to get the buy-in, you have to get the right people, you have to make sure people know what their tasks are. You have to have one goal in mind. You know, our goal is our clients, it's our citizens of the United States, wherever it happens to be. But we will use business processes and we'll use technology. But technology should not be the starting goal, I'd argue. And I'd offer, you want examples, I'd offer example of, I've seen it many times where, you know, you're driven by technology, you know, there's a we have an issue, we're gonna solve this with technology. You bring in the tech experts and you have the business operation unit and they try to communicate, but they don't really communicate, but they come up with the technology. Who's the real owner of the technology? And in the end, it fails. But if you get them aligned and they're working together, huge difference. So what's a goal? What's the business process? How are we gonna get there? The alignment, you know, people have their assignments, they know what those are, and here's how we're gonna get there.
And that's not to say that the technology obviously has a huge role to play, certainly at Monster over the past 2 years and 2.5 years, in a very difficult economic climate, we've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in innovation, new technologies. But we needed to decide what we want to do, set the goals, exactly what was just said, and then follow through using technology to execute and accomplish the goals, and not be afraid of where we get the technology from. It's not all homegrown, some of it is homegrown, a lot of it is acquired. Wherever the best technology, wherever the best ideas lie, let's go get them, bring them in, and let's utilize them and be open-minded enough to accept that.
The best, you know, kind of way to drive that, if you will, buy-in or mandate for change or what have you and get people aligned is, number one, what people are paid on, and number two, what the boss checks on, you know, what's on the agenda. Those two things, more than anything else, I think rally an organization to, you know, it's one thing for the boss to say something. This is what I think is important. It's another thing is every single week is what you start the meeting with. What people, you know, this is what's most important. What are the results? It's what you ask questions on when you walk the halls. And number two, what's the what drives the compensation system? Because that's what will move people. Now, it may be a little bit different in government with respect to how you do that. Whatever the reward system is, it's what I, you know, what is rewarded, and that's what people will rally behind.
You know, I'd almost go back a step and just remind us that we've got to make sure the strategy is well thought out. The scenario planning's been done before you crank into the technology. I think a lot of times we're guilty of heading into the technology without doing a thorough job of thinking through the strategy. And where's your customer going to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Where's the world going to be 5 years, 10 years from now? And I think that's where it all starts. And it is as a core competency.
And applying technology, one of the big pitfalls is often because, you know, it's kind of our business, so we actually like technology being the solution more often than not. But it's basically, you know, there's IT is told to go automate the existing process, and that's probably problem number one, is not, you know, rethinking the process in total, and rather than automating the way it's currently done.
I can reinforce that in the government. First, when I first got there last winter, in the midst of a very large IT project to combine the pay and personnel systems of all the military departments in the Department of Defense. So you're talking 3 million people. This is a huge, huge project. And people had not done just what you said, Jim. What we did, I won't say the product since we've got a camera here, but took a IT product that you have all heard of that is widely used in the private sector and said, we'll just apply this to the Department of Defense and we'll, you know, in a few months we'll be up and running. Well, 7 years later, I canceled this program, several years and several billion dollars later, because nobody had rethought how we were going to do the pay and personnel systems and how the military pay and personnel differed from private sector pay and personnel. The fact that there's an order of magnitude more changes
in the system. You have combat pay, you have flight pay. It's not just changing your 401k and giving a pay raise once a year. So this very successful private sector system just didn't work as the Defense Department was engineered. But no one had gone in and started with what you're saying, Jim, is, you know, how do we want to do this? And then how would we apply, do we want to change it? Maybe we don't, maybe we do. But then does the technology fit how we want to engineer this? So I think that exactly right.
You know, one of the things, I think I echo everything that's been said. One of the lessons I think that we took away is that huge IT projects on our own are obviously very problematic. So what we've tried to do is break our projects down, as opposed to looking at a watershed event, we're rolling out a new IT. Instead, how do we build a learning culture, and we're constantly doing new IT. So, and then we find the training integrates better, it integrates more thoroughly, and we get the step change, but we do it in an incremental fashion as opposed to one big change of technology every 10 years or every 5 years.
But as everybody has discussed, it still has to start from an endpoint and work its way backwards, right? If this is a for the people organization, and that's why you're here, then you need to start with what the people need. And if it's NASA, there's a customer, and if it's, you know, the welfare office, there's a customer, and you figure out what that need set is, and then you build your deliverable backwards from there, always post-audit and saying to yourself, have this money gone to help meet the business need, which is satisfying the customer. And I think a lot of times in private business, and I perceive it in government, that they take a life of their own and we engage in doing things to help ourselves, but it doesn't at the end of the day serve our customer. So this whole idea of customer back is something that I think private and public sector ought to be a part of.
And see, that's where we start. At T. Rowe Price, the customer comes first, right? So if everyone in the firm, every employee is thinking about the customer, and trying to do some things more efficiently, continually, think about business processes and utilizing technology and that sort of thing to be more efficient continually, that's the driving force. What's the strategy? What's the need for change? To do a better and better job for the customer over time, for the people of the United States, for our customers.
How does it start? I mean, I've written down at least four different things, all of which make huge sense. I'm also conscious of Bill's comment about we've got an array of, let me be polite and say, opportunities here. And I mean, we can pick a system. I mean, the president mentioned it, so patent system, or the VA system, which was also mentioned. Where should we start to do this? I mean, are there tangible steps? You're talking about incremental, which makes a huge amount of sense. We talk about doing from the customers, but yet when we're faced with systems that are antiquated.
I would say, it always does. I think this is the first point here, mandate for change. I think that's what we are confronted with in spite of what everything that we do. How do you enthusiasm the organization? And there's one thing of the CEO saying, okay, we got to do that, right? That alone doesn't move the needle. You have to make the case for change, because you typically, to get large amounts of people moving into one direction, you have to create a burning platform. You pretty much have to make clear in a convincing case to them that remaining as is not an option. This platform is burning. You better get off it, right? And I think you need some smart people, and you can do it with various things. You can do it with lining out what others are doing and benchmarking, you know, saying, hey, look, this is so antiquated. For us, it takes 10 days, and look at what Japan or Singapore, God knows, or China does. You know, they do it in half an hour, right? And when people see that we're not talking about 10%, 15%, we're talking about cutting it down to 10, to 5%, that is a convincing case. And we could go on and on. There's a couple of things. It depends on what you're looking at. That's one thing. The second thing I think is you have to really, really be smart in picking the right people who you assign this task for. And I would always go to the person who understands the process and support the person with ideas. But
But if you don't have somebody who understands that and is smart enough to drill through it, I mean, then the organization gets in a funk, you know, everybody's kind of, we got to change, you know, but nobody knows what and how, you know, and it goes real bad, you know. And so, and third thing is, I think that you also have to prioritize, what do you start with first? And I would always start with a customer, be it internal or external, that's the best measure in terms of what value you create, or with a cost, because sometimes the best value you can create is just looking at your cost structure and say, you know, this affects 50% of my cost. So it's pretty much a no-brainer. If I can get 100% out of that, I'd start with that, right? Just to say a few things on this.
So you have, the corporate world has a natural incentive in the marketplace, and in the government, we do not have that. So that's, I think, what we struggle with.
You're jumping to conclusions too fast. I think that human beings always want to be proud of what they do, and you have that everywhere. People want to do good. And that's the point, I think you brought it up, on the measurement side, you know. If you make transparent which teams are performing well, to be on a list, simply to, if it's not related to anything, but to see that your team is at the bottom of the list continuously, that by itself is painful.
Let me pick on the patent office. We're the third largest now filer patent, so we're subject to the pain that is caused by this. I actually, part of the problem is, top-down direction has to be clear as to what are the goals and constraints and what's immutable. I think everybody in the patent office is absolutely trying to do the right thing. In a tight environment, how much do you get to invest in things that may take some time to pay off? You could say, oh, we should never have any patent backlog. That probably has a cost that is prohibitive, so that probably is not the right answer. But how you frame the goals and the objectives and the constraints, because there are, I think the thing that's probably driving the patent office more than anything is the constraints, not the ability to hire good people and to get the projects done and this sort of thing. You know, is the patent office going to be break-even or not a break-even operation? I think it's a discussion that's going on as part of patent reform, just as an example. And it would affect what they do. They look more like a P&L, or they don't look more like, and no policy statement here, just the simple fact that it's part of framing the goal. That is all about information. Everything in their processes is about receiving information, digesting information, processing information. And so in a sense, deciding what those goals are and then saying, okay, how do we remake process to deliver against that goal set? And then how do we make sure that, you know, we measure whether that's backlog or whatever the case may be. But most of the process changes that a lot of time working with IT guys on these projects, they mostly go wrong because the business people can't clearly communicate, or the IT people won't clearly ask for direction on what is actually supposed to be accomplished. Our own sales reporting system, it's a disaster. This goes back probably 15 years. It wasn't an IT problem. Somebody had to decide on what the definition of a sale is. Microsoft Word gets sold in about 28 different forms. So what is a version of Microsoft Word for the purposes of reporting? It's not an IT problem. But really having that dialogue, what's the process, and making sure the goals are clear and their goals to the modernization people, be those technology or otherwise, I think winds up really being at the root of a lot of the big change management issues. Management doesn't know what mandate they're really giving.
In terms of, you know, kind of how to go about fixing processes, actually, we've learned from Steve, you guys at Microsoft, I think you guys came up with the kind of the Scrum methodology, which is the notion of, you know, so many of these processes that need to get fixed are almost overwhelming. It's like boiling the ocean. And so you take, you know, you think about the process, which groups are involved, and you take one person, let's say from sales, one from marketing, one from engineering, one from manufacturing, a really, really kind of bright subject matter expert, basically lock these people in a room, you know, and you sneak food under the door 2-3 times a day, and you come and you check up on them, and you expect progress every 2 days or once a week or what have you, and you let them work and you empower them. And it's amazing how much more effective just a few people can be if they're given one goal and really locked in a room and not allowed to move, and know that the expectations are to get this thing fixed in a very short period of time. And you guys, I don't know if you use it or not, but I think you know, Microsoft should get the credit for what's considered the Scrum process, which is kind of a rugby term with all these people working together.
That's part of the sponsorship. who owns the product, right? It's not just the people in technology, it's not just the top management, but people own it, right? They're locked in that room, right? They're gonna make sure this gets done. And their pride's on the line, whether they're in the government and they're nonprofit or for-profit, there's pride. So there's direction from the top. What's the strategy? What's the business process to be changed? Then there's buy-in. And it's buy-in by these sponsors. Yeah. And these sponsors know the game.
You gotta have a big
then
sponsor.
Then the technologists, where we had the most problem with technology is when the people in operations just don't talk with people in technology. But when you have technology people embedded in operations and they understand operations, then it's rapid fire. You know, then it's real time as opposed to going out to bid and all the stuff that you have to do and to rationalize things.
Every project that failed that we did was led not by business but by IT. So our CIO today will say, I'll tell you it's a problem if the IT head in a country or the CIO is the leader. There's always teams. I mean, it's not that they're, but if the number one sponsor who's going to make those last decisions on no customization, reject till it gets done and drive it isn't not just a business owner, but a high-level business owner. Mm-hmm. It has a high propensity to fail. It has to get bubbled up to people who are like, I don't have time. If it's that big a transformation, it has to be almost at the top of an inordinate amount of time and leadership, not from technology. So it's thought that there really is not a technology transformation ever. It's always a process transformation. And so to your question, like, it's really not about what systems or what should we look at. It's really what processes are broken. And you may find that they actually touch several when you take a process, several systems, actually. And that is where, and I think you can get the most changes when you actually look at it from a business process owner or a business and a high-level departmental head, not their CIO.
I'll give you an example of a thing I think works quite well in the government in terms of business owners taking leadership and really getting it done. I don't know whether it was 20 years ago, somebody decided that information was the key to warfare. If you actually look at the information put in front of the warfighter, I would consider those systems, sometimes they look ad hoc and they're enabling. Some of them look very centralized and controlled, but that's one where the line of business clearly understands, knows what they want, cares deeply, and drives it hard. I won't talk about logistics and HR systems because I think that probably falls in a little different category. But certainly on the let's call it systems for the warfighter, you see a whole different best systems I've seen in the government all relate to things where the leaders, which is not true in most of the civilian agencies, the leaders aren't primarily of mission process, they come from some other place, and it's a little bit different, I would say, at least on the warfighting side.
Well, let me translate that a little bit and throw it back as a question. Is it in not just DOD, but I think across government, we're missing a couple of the tools you have, and so we need to find substitutes, since that's where I'm going. One of them you mentioned, Dan, our compensation system is not as flexible as the private sector. People sometimes aspire to that, but that put that aside, within the compensation system we have to work, and that is there's some room for bonuses, but it is not at all, it is not as performance oriented, it's more tenure oriented. So that's one tool, it's much more limited. The other tool is one Lori mentioned, is we ultimately don't have a bottom line as a metric. We have the kind of service we provide the citizens. I mean, for the Defense Department, it's whether we win the nation's wars or better yet prevent them. But that's a much more difficult metric. And as a consequence, most of the metrics we get measured on tend to be more inputs than outputs. So how, when you're trying to drive change, how do I find substitutes? So one of them you talked about was leadership, but how do I find substitutes? Because I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm not going to make this a private sector enterprise. So I'm going to have to.
I think, Bill, you have to have measurement. You have to. If you don't have measurement, you are going for failure. Because what doesn't get measured doesn't get done. And you have to decide if you don't have a bottom line, there is something that measures the improvement of whatever you want to improve. And you, I would say, if you haven't decided on that, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to decide what's the measurement, or if there is more than one measurement. And then you have to decide what is the rate of improvement that you believe is possible. And that's where the whole goal setting comes in, which, you can use various things for. I mean, best ever achieved result outside best practices, right? But and then I think you wanted to provide transparency and make that transparent to more than just that team, because you want to utilize this human factor of pride, because everybody wants to be on a winning team. Mm-hmm. People don't come in with the desire to screw up. They come in everywhere with the desire to do good.
The best method is always customer satisfaction. Well, even DOD, you have customers. You have a customer base somewhere. You can measure the customer satisfaction. And I think that it's not an agency that you can't do that.
Can I join your question? And I think we have an answer to your question, because you don't have some of the comp incentives that private industry has. And I'm going to guess that actually we could make the problem of that worse. I don't disagree with what anyone is saying about pride and measurement, but a lot of the aims of what gets done in transforming processes, standardizing them, and then utilizing IT as it innovates, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I defer to you on this, because every time Microsoft, HP, or one of these companies comes to our company, they're talking about ways that we can take, it's kind of like towns built before the highways, ways that we can get out of redundant systems, that because in IT, scale, centralization, standardization makes things available for superior and innovative process. But what happens when you do that is you're cutting out people. And so while you can have the pride of achievement, a lot of what happens when you go through this question of change the process or make it more efficient in terms of IT is risks the roles, the powers, even the employment levels of the number of people that you have. And so if I could just take Time Warner, and I'm guessing that the government has analogies to this. Our company came up through mergers. We had Time, we had Warner, we merged, then we merged with Turner, then we merged with AOL. I don't want to talk about it. What ended up happening, every one of those industries is different, and every one of them had its own IT and its own software development. It was all subscale. And so as I sit here today, and I think many big companies with multiple divisions have this, we're all trying to get out of doing in-house inside Turner, which built its own system, versus HBO versus Warner. We're trying to get to standardization so that it's available for the innovative scale practices that companies like yours develop. It always threatens all the people, not just in IT, but the process adjacent people that run the way the systems are today. And it either takes out levels of workers, which is actually partly the aim of it, or it moves around the power of who's got authority status and so forth. So I don't have the answer to that. I'm just saying that while I think every comment here is right about measuring and creating rewards for what is accomplished, there's the other side of the coin, which is you're going to face resistance from everybody that's in these, you know, current status quo, that don't want to standardize. They'll always tell you, well, we need this customized system that you mentioned in our department here because we're doing this kind of work, and it's not going to work as well if we merge it with some other department in the government. There's truth in it at one level, but not in another. And the question of where to, you know, allow the customized special mission of each of the government's missions to take over is, and where the line is for standardization, centralization. I bet you have, like we do, a whole lot of data centers and a whole lot of software development operations, very expensive things, that are trying to make customized solutions for different departments of government that frankly don't, neither of one needs to be there, and both are less efficient than centralized. And if you centralize them, then they can do it and give you the latest good innovation. And that's the problem you're going to have. It's, industry has it. And everything that's been said is right. Industry deals with it with top-down measurement and getting business owners, not IT people, to run it. But basically, you do have a definition of scope problem, not just an IT design problem.
Maybe I can just give you an example where we used, this administration is the best at communicating vision. So So we wanted to go 100% paperless. Okay, so let me just say we have 10 million sales, independent sales people all around the world. And every 2 to 3 weeks, they order, and their order has an invoice that they were used to being printed so they could check off, I ordered three, blah, blah, blah. And they did not want to give up this paper invoice. And so obviously there was a cost benefit to the company, a lot per millions and millions of paper invoices, and we built the case that combined, it really was a green case. And when they understood, and when they truly understood, and we gave them an example of how many tons of paper and trees were cut, how much, certainly we parenthetically are saving a tremendous amount of money from a productivity point of view just doing e-invoicing. But the selling of this, because to them there was nothing in it for them except they were going to be good citizens, but when it became not a takeaway or a behavior change for many of them that they had to do year after year, but there was this compelling vision of why, which wasn't monetary, but it was about doing good, a good thing. It ramped up the change so that we went from zero, I can give you examples in Central and Eastern Europe, to 95% in 18 months because we understood how to communicate, package the change management, which really wasn't about an economic incentive. So I think there is, and then we recognize, and you can, and then all these people aren't even our employees per se, but I think there's the power always of to your points, recognition, what's the vision, what is the purpose of this change, and that compelling, consistent thought from, that doesn't have to be an economic benefit. Just one example, and it was pretty remarkable.
I would echo that. The power of recognition when you don't have compensation is a lever. It gets back to pride that people have. For individuals to be recognized in front of their peers by somebody really important is enormously powerful. I mean, just can't be overemphasized.
I think also to bring it back, to bring a case like patent fine. Let's take the patent fine, right? To bring it back to a human element. Could help. I mean, if you show to an inventor, to those people that handle this, what it means to an inventor to not make it to market 2 years, right? To have to wait for 2 more years instead of now, what the inventor loses out on, right? What I've done in many of my business, I invited a patient, for instance, when I ran medical business. A patient didn't tell my employees that I do that at a normal employee meeting. Invite a patient, have the patient come and talk about how his or her life was changed through the equipment that we provided. I tell you, it made a change like day and night because it brings back, right, the understanding of that's the meaning of our job. At Alcoa, I mean, we invited people from NASA, right, to speak to us, to make them understand what goes on in the mind of an astronaut when he enters the capsule that's about to get shot out to outer space. For that individual to know that we are a leader in quality means a hell of a lot, a hell of a lot. And for the employees to hear it from a user, bringing it back to your point, from a customer, who eventually puts their lives partially in our hands, right? Huge, the stories. I mean, you create a story that is, I mean, brings it back, brings the meaning back to the workplace, right? People understand why this is necessary. Right? That's what I meant with a burning platform. You can do it in a negative way and you can do it in a positive way.
Can I ask how long it took in your example, the green example, what the timeline was when you talked to the people who would be impacted by no longer killing the trees and printing the paper to the time where they wanted to be a part of it?
About 2 years, and we just wanted to roll it out and test it to make sure that there were no changes inside of order or whatever it may be, but less than we thought. I mean, and remarkable compared to other major systems changes that were trying to change processes where you had change behavior resistance, which took a long time. So we erred in being slow, and then I guess to the president's point, by the time you get the technology and it's already obsolete, you're starting it again because we would choose to go slower in our minds originally to go faster, but the speed of technology is changing so fast that.
In the end, the transparency that you put out there and the engagement that you have with those who would be impacted by it, rather than just saying, this is the new directly from the top today. This is how we will now do business. That was, that made it be successful. And that is, I mean, that's something I think in federal agencies, and probably in other companies too, but I just know about the federal agencies, that often doesn't happen. Whether it's about changes in leadership at the top, whether it's about the fact that our budgets come through once a year, we don't have multi-year planning of budgets, and very often the year starts and we still don't have a budget like this year. You know, so I mean, there are very real reasons that some of those things happen, but to engage employees or whoever's impacted, the customer, however you define them, in the federal government, and to get them to buy in to why a change needs made rather than to just issue a memo and say this is the way it will be. I think in many federal agencies we're losing the good ideas that frontline employees have. And I would love to hear how you, in a big organization, you know, everyone at the top, I'll make this up, but there's 10 layers. In the top three layers, everybody gets it. And everybody says and does the right thing and nods their heads at meetings and, you know. But the other seven layers and down where the rubber meets the road are never engaged in that conversation. There's no transparency. There's no conversation. There's no saying, well, if you have, you know, if you think this isn't the right way, then what is? And maybe those ideas don't get adopted, but at least they've been heard. They've had a chance to be in the conversation. And I think we need to figure out how to make that happen in federal agencies, large and small.
You know, it's interesting. You know, both I had the privilege of running two companies, Symbol and Symbol Technologies and now Monster. Both were companies of about 6,000 people, roughly. And in the first 6 months, probably in each job, put on about 20 pounds, taking people to dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever. And it's people at all levels in the company, not just the executives, but it's people at, you know, the lowest rung, if you will, on up, and get their ideas, harvest input from them. Now, you're not going to put all of that into practice, but you're going to, best ideas rise to the top. And you engage and you change the culture. You know, a large part of my career was on Wall Street. It's sort of a negative thing, I guess, to say these days. But I remember, you know, bonuses, the issue of bonuses is not a new issue. It's, you know, through the 80s and 90s was exactly the same as it is today. And you could pay someone $1 million bonus or $2 million bonus, and if you didn't create a culture and an environment where people were challenged, they were able to give input, they were part of doing something more than earning that $1 million or $2 million bonus, you were going to lose those people, right? Money only lasts. You know, people feel good for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, but after you put the money away or spend it or whatever it is you do with it, it comes to then good people want to feel that they're accomplishing something and they're accomplishing change and they're doing things. So if you build an attitude, certainly the government has a handicap, if you will, because of the comp issue, but it is not fatal. I mean, we could have another discussion about why we don't fix that, but that's a whole other issue, I guess. I don't think we have enough time. But short of that, I think there's a lot that can be done to create the right mindset and engage people at all levels. It's not just at the top. If you just do it at the top and you don't get to the people that actually do the work, you know, certainly not me, but the people that make, for example, my company tick every day and turn on the lights in the morning, if you don't engage them, you're not going to succeed, particularly with something where you're talking about fundamental change in process, employing technologies, making people secure enough that they can bring in people from the outside and turn over some of the work to those people to the outside who may be better suited to do it, et cetera. It's a fundamental psychological change to the way the enterprise thinks.
The thing I hear you about the comp system and the bottom line, although the number of people in most companies who actually know anything about or optimize on the bottom line is de minimis. I mean, there's probably 10 people in our company who actually know how to figure out the bottom line. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just everybody's got their local goals. The thing I always feel about government is two years was a good job, right? That was a pretty good, and that's a pretty good major process change management project. Government people seem to switch around just about enough that you can't count on the consistency of two years, let alone two plus if it wasn't a fast, you know, and I'm not talking about an IT project now, I'm just talking about big process change management, which may be supported by IT or may not. I actually think that's probably be the number one thing I would, I have to be empathetic with you guys about. In some part, you know, it's a little different in DOD than it would be in some of the civilian, a little bit more consistency in some of the DOD aspects than non-DOD. But is that how, I mean, I don't know if it feels that way on the government side.
Average tenure of a government executive, you know, political government executive, 18 months.
Wow. And our folks count on that. They count on that, and they know they can wait us out. And they want, you know, why should I listen when I know someone else is going to be in here? And for NASA, that's really hard given the long-term nature of what we're doing. So if we want to make a shift, it's very hard to get that adopted because of that.
Can we ask that then as a question to you to maybe help us? Because I think a number of people here have said, top-down goal setting, top-down measurement and recognition, top-down mandate for change is important, and related to it that the, quote, business owner or whoever the line power is handling it and making the trade-offs, not just the IT person. If you put this question to you, because you know it and we don't, what do you do about the fact that the top management is rotating? What does that do, in, you know, when you translate these comments in that,
one of the things it does for me is the one you have second from the bottom, I would put up near the top.
Okay.
Early wins. Yeah.
Right.
You've got to get in there, and I mean, I'm going to stay more than 18 months, but you know you have, you know, it's an election cycle job. You have to identify something fairly early and something that you think you can achieve in a political life, which is at most 4 years.
Let me just go, because I was going to go there anyway. Now you put a perfect frame on it, and it's something you said. Can these projects be broken down into smaller pieces that could be accomplished in, let me say, 18 months, because inconveniently that is the average tenure of a senior?
You might want to take large-scale business transformation off the slide then. I mean, there is an oxy. It's a bit of an oxymoron.
Which is why we are where we are.
Because when you also throw in the pace of technology change, and you know, without getting into it, some of the procurement issues we have. If it takes you 18 months to scope a project, and then you scope it as a 3-year project, it will be obsolete when it's done.
And whoever did it doesn't care.
Oh, well, it's on to his third or fourth job. So the question is there an ability, and actually I think at least two or three of you actually explicitly mentioned this in your homework. You know, is there ability to take, because I don't want to give up on large-scale transformations because we need them, but is there an ability to make that large-scale transformations in fact, Klaus, I think you said it, make a 4-year project for 1-year projects?
You know, I think it's another way of looking at it. I think a lot of folks, when I was took over, said, you know, when you're rolling out ERM and ERP and some of these big systems, it has to all be done once in the whole thing. And, you know, the problem is the number of moving parts just gets so big. And whether it's pay for DOD versus pay for DOE versus pay for DOS, we have this. Not at your scale, but we have the same issues, grown through acquisition, 30-some-odd businesses that every go thing from outsourcing state services to building things for DOD. And what we found is you pilot it, and you just start adding on to it. Now, we got to large-scale, totally integrated systems, but we didn't try it as one big program. We actually built it and incrementally did it over a course of a 3-4-year period. And what we found is it probably would have taken us 4 years anyway with a lot of blowouts in the process. But instead, we got there with no blowouts, and it was not a big deal.
I would agree with Chuck. If you throw this scrum in a room and they come up with an idea, you actually implement it or pilot it very quickly. You know if you've got a success, so you've got a success, you can trump it very quickly. And if it doesn't work, no big deal. If you've done it in, let's say, you know, one small group or one call center instead of nationally, the harm to the company is very minimal if it doesn't work or if it screws up because you've isolated it. So you can just, you know, you can try small things very quickly. If it doesn't work, try something else. Because if you're going to do something, a massive change, you got to make sure you get it exactly right before you implement it. And so it's going to take longer to make sure, because the risk is very high of getting it wrong. if you try things and the risk is low, I think you can make a lot more progress.
And even in a massive project, you always have the critical paths along the way, again, which would be your real victims. If you don't hit that critical path, you know, it's one project, five projects.
Sorry, I had a question. So if sounds good to me, if you had some project pilots and quote successes short term, would it actually lead to adoption or would it lead to more intelligent resistance? Because it proved
that's the actual history. We have been death by pilots in the government. Yeah. You know, I've been doing this for 30 years from different angles of it, and you know, people pilot to death things, but nobody ever actually puts the knowledge together and makes a cumulative change.
Because it tells you, well, here's what they're going to say, yeah, and how we can beat that. Here's how we get the new political boss sidetracked. Yeah. Here's what it's going to do if it saves money.
I think we're oversteering. It's not quite particularly. You know,
well, he said DOD wasn't as bad.
DOD, I think, maybe is a little different. I mean, what I found, and all the things are true. There's institutional, any organization, there's institutional biases. There's, as Jeff was saying, you know, big change threatens people and their roles and their jobs. The other thing I found, I think maybe the Department of Defense in particular, but I think it's throughout government, is the department craves direction. They want to know where the leaders want to go, and they really want to get you there. I mean, now they don't want to lose their job. I don't want to, they're not crazy, but so there is an appetite for leadership in the department, and I mean, there's a real receptivity to an expectation with the new. In fact, one of the things you find difficult coming in with when you only got a partial team and you're trying to get everything organized is pedaling as fast as the career people want you to pedal. They want to know, okay, where are we going? I said, geez, I haven't found my office yet, you know. But I think there is a counter to the waited out. I mean, they're both
certainly. And what you have both said of people wanting, I think that you've told me a whole bunch of interesting things about people wanting buy-in and feeling like they're doing the right thing. Those are all things that we see with our employees for sure.
You know, we have very much the same. We actually have eliminated the phrase pilot or test, because I would go in and somebody go, well, we're going to pilot in Estonia. Like, do we even do business in Estonia? It's so small. I mean, this is what would happen, and it would be the wait and see. So what? It's only phased. So we don't go, you know, we don't go whole hog. But this is who's going in phase one. You know, but we had to eliminate the word, because by definition the word pilot meant this too may fail. We all see, and we'll decide later if it's for us. So I mean, just even in the private
but
sector.
But it's tough to come in and have to do this. I came in and NASA was about to roll out a $4 billion couple of contracts on IT, and they were exactly the wrong direction. And yet, when I tried to stop it, people said, we've had this in the works for 2 years. You're really going to stop it? Well, they were going to start more data centers. And I just met with Vivek, and he said, we need fewer. We want data centers combined agency to agency, much less NASA has 80 on its own. So we're really going to do that. And, it was like seriously bloody to stop it and redo it, and got a new CIO in order to carry it out. But you feel terrible as a representative of the taxpayer making those decisions, because you know 2 years has gone through. But each case, you have to say, get people to buy in, and okay, long term, this is where we want to be. NASA's not partisan. None of this is partisan political. This is just, we're here, we've already bought into this, let us finish it, kind of political. Which you guys have, this is shocking to me and much more interesting than I thought it'd be, that this is where you see it. And I'm wondering if you rated these in order of where you think the government needs more help.
Yeah, would you tell us, because you told us what we said, could you tell us what you think is practical?
Practical?
To implement the priorities that you think are most effective.
That's the right order. I mean, that's where we are. But I'm also, I think we're also constrained here because we're all CEOs or deputies of large agencies, and so, you know, I don't get involved in them.
I mean, I think I generally agree with what you, I have trouble sometimes separating all the words. I don't know how you did.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree, but I think you took the, I think we've almost combined the first two, is that you need to, re-engineer the process, and that is the kind of the mandate for before you apply technology, and I agree with that. And that I think is probably the most important one. As I said, I would raise
you know, kind of the idea that we need, you need to do things, particularly in government, but I wouldn't think it's that different with you, within a pretty short timeline, which pushes me towards this early wins. I want to, maybe it's, Andrew, it's your phased approach. You need to start showing success fairly quickly. I guess the third, and it isn't on there, that I would add in there. Is it on there so we can find it? No, I don't think so. I think there's a bandwidth issue. Is that I think you have to prioritize your attention and pick out. I guess it's analogous to the early wins, but that you can't have 20 of them.
Yeah.
I work with Bill Perry at the Department of Defense, and he as secretary, he had a little. I'm not sure whether he had literally had a card in his pocket, but you could tell he had three or four things written down, and he drove everything through that. And if it didn't, and there were big things like improve the quality of life for the average service member and their family, but if you were talking to him and trying to get him to do something, whether it's change the budget or spend time or go speak, or whatever, if it didn't fit one of those priorities, your chances of success were very low. And the smarter people figured out what the three or four were and started driving everything through that. But that's another one that I would add there, is you have to prioritize, because you can only instrument so much change.
But related, all companies have that same issue. There's always more to do.
Absolutely.
So the prioritization process is really important. I think every company is looking at examples of how they
absolutely.
Do it. I'm not sure. I don't know how the government does that necessarily, just between agencies. But the prioritization is critical.
And it's not just a bandwidth. It's also you're pulling people off their day job while they're dealing with this change, and quality goes down and everything else.
I've got a question, and this is more for the folks who work in government. In the 90s, this was taken on at a really high level, right? Government reform with Gore leading the band.
Reinventing government.
Right. And it went on for 7 or 8 years. It went on for 2 terms. And I remember the image of all the paper in the room and the move. Was there any legs to that?
It was a morale disaster. If you can find one of those hammer awards in an employee's office today, I'll give you $10 for every one you find. In other words, it started from the premise that none of you know what the hell you're doing. If you just worked like the private sector, you'd be all great. And it destroyed morale. It would premise the whole notion of you had to be reinvented was like, must mean you're crap now. And so we destroyed in one fell swoop the morale of the federal government. So as the chief people person for the federal government right now, it'll be over my dead body, we use that word again. Yeah. But we've got to be, and I think you heard that in the president's talk today. We got people who know what they're doing. Some of them are the best and the brightest in their fields. What we need to do is figure out how to do it. Bill, building on your logic, the one topic which is kind of interesting, I don't think the government is ever going to be the cutting edge innovator on technology. My number two one was balancing using proven and emerging using proven technologies. That our biggest problem is sometimes we get out ahead of the curve instead of just relying on what's proven. Let you guys do the emerging and work out the kinks, because we're never going to get there. We ought to be relying solely on the proven. And it may mean we're going to be a generation or two behind. Right now, I'd love to just get in the 20th century, for God's sake, let alone the 21st.
No, we have a fascinating combination. I mean, I think, John, you're exactly right, of cutting edge that doesn't work and truly antiquated. If we could have everything be 5 to 10 years behind where you guys are, we'd be so happy. I mean, if we had a payroll system that was the equivalent of, that worked, just based on what you guys had 5 years ago, or the data center equivalents of what you guys had 5 years ago, I'd take it in a minute.
These always make me feel so good, because I think NASA does a really good job at things like that, and in fact, I would argue we're the opposite. I always make the case, the government's the one who can take the high risk. And that's what we were set up to do. Of course, it's in a technology different than sort of process technologies. But the thing I was surprised wasn't on here that I would put would be, you've got a little bit in engagement of line managers. But for me, related to the issue of prioritization, is okay, I can only have so many things to do. So it's all about placing senior people who I need doing those things that I can't always do. And getting your management team together is surprising to me. It's not a part of this. And it's a challenge for us at NASA, for instance. Out of 18,000 people, we have maybe a dozen political appointees. So these aren't going to be political appointees. My CIO is a civil servant. That's how, so you have to work through the system that John is doing a great job with and trust your people and get great people in there. And it's surprising to me. Do you all must just take that as a given, right?
I think that was, I feel without a given.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that's just inherently constraining the government it's one of these things, the constraint you have to manage is the budget process, which is obviously a congressional appropriations process. So it for an IT product, it will take me longer to budget for it, probably, Dan, than it takes you to develop it. I mean, it'll take me 18 to 24 months if I just go through the full process of developing it through the internal process, and then 9 to 10, 11 months through the congressional process. Well, that, you know, by definition, is it what 18-month cycles and Moore's law and all of it. So we need to find IT acquisition processes that somehow get around that in a way that Congress finds acceptable, and that's because I can't spend money except in the way Congress tells me to, but I need to buy the most modern products. How I do that is a huge. I mean, we've got ways, but it's a and that's just a constraint. I think you all just don't face and never will. I think I wouldn't wish it on you anyway.
Right.
Can I ask a question? In terms of certain angles of defense, in terms of cybersecurity, I would think you can't afford to be behind, and I would guess that you're pretty good, if not really good. What do you learn there that, you know, because as you know, if you're behind in cybersecurity, we're all in trouble, right? Because the internet is so damn important to you, but also to all of us, right? If that gets attacked and goes down for some reason, you know, that's going to really break this country, right? So I assume, I hope, you guys are at the cutting edge, and you have cutting edge people and technologies in terms of thinking about cybersecurity. So I would think that there's probably lessons there that you can then transfer out.
That's exactly where I'm going. I mean, the National Security Agency is frankly world class in terms of cybersecurity and its acquisition process. Its supercomputing is as good as anywhere you will find. And the challenge, frankly, is not improving them. Is applying what they do to other parts of the Department of Defense, and taking the expertise that they have and applying it to other parts of the government in ways that the citizenry finds acceptable in terms of civil liberties and privacy, it would be crazy to recreate that expertise. We don't have the time, we don't have the money, we don't have the management talent to do it. So we have to find a way to take what's been developed at the National Security Agency and apply it on the Homeland Security and in the .com, the .gov and the .com worlds with appropriate protection. So, I mean, our challenges are more along those lines than there we are cutting edge, as you hoped.
Thank you.
And the biggest lock to that leverage, just even through defense, never mind the rest of government, would be what? Just in terms of taking that and leveraging that those practices, best practices, makes obviously what in the past or what could we help you on in terms of maybe the way we would do something like that? What would be the biggest stumbling block here?
The biggest stumbling block, I think you mentioned that you can't really help us with, is this process for budgeting, and you know, we have to go through it because we're the tax dollars.
But I'd be interested, there is a process that I found. I don't know how John, you'd probably be, or Colleen would do the best. One of the things, I mean, we just went through a searing experience, and Colleen got to share part of it with us, with this a new personnel system, NSPS. And I won't get into that was a very controversial with unions and elsewhere. But one of the things we found in looking at that is the culture of at least DOD civilians in how they approached personnel evaluation wasn't where we needed it. People did not consider it part of their core function. Very, very good people did not. I mean, this is I think it has something to do with how they had moved up. They had, you know, moved up from an office job, an office head to heading a whole group, and you know they did it, and they cared about their people. But you know, in terms of kind of evaluations and performance ratings, it was very much something that they weren't interested in. And that must be a problem you deal with, because it's not much fun to write these things. It's very important, but it's not much fun. And how do you get people to pay attention to that? And I don't know, Laurie or John, is that endemic through the government? Or
it is, and at NASA it is. And from the 8 years, Bill and I worked together a little during that 8 year Republican leadership here in the country and in the private sector. I was shocked, 6 month reviews, you took it seriously. We go to the government, people write their own and you sort of check it off. It's completely, completely different.
There's no training of managers. I mean, you're the only one, you're the one department that actually does it. I don't know of any, very well, some at IRS.
We're best in breed, we've got a little bit of a problem, right? Well,
yeah. We don't do it. Everybody's outstanding at NASA. And if you're not,
you're
in trouble.
Night, but the question is whether that applies to you. If you have a lot of promotions, you can say, for instance, you have a certain deadline, and you say, if this individual hasn't filed all the evaluations for the people that work for her or him, no promotion goes through from that department.
It's not that. It's, as Laurie said, people file them. It's the person below you writes them. And you sign them. It's no problem. And every, as you say, everybody's outstanding.
But you know something, Bill. What I find interesting about the last
what's that town in Wisconsin?
What I find everybody's interesting about the last 15 minutes is it's very hard. I think everybody, all the CEOs here will agree. It's hard to fix a problem that you don't know what the problem is. And we all came to this meeting with a perception of government. Some at different levels, having worked in different form and functions. But we spent the first part of the meeting talking about solutions. And we spent the last 15 or 20 minutes talking about the problem. So a point I would put to you as you continue this dialogue is you ought to give this kind of group or a different group on a different day some type of map of where you're at. Yeah. And how you do what you do, so we're not all going from what we think or what we believe or what we saw on CNN or Fox. We are going from what we know, and then I think you would get a much better quality of answer.
So could I ask, because while I've got the brain power around this table, it would be a huge help to me. We have tried to automate our retirement system in the federal government 5 times. We've spent almost $120 million. Every one of them, I took the last one behind the barn and shot it. We spent that much money, we have nothing to show for it. I am still processing retirements, paper files, 18th century, notes. the best I can figure is why this has run up on the rocks was each retirement is, we used to think we could force it into a private sector system because there'd be maybe 5 to 6 choices of what your retirement could be. And in fact, we found out because, well, when you're on flight pay in Afghanistan, you get paid one rate for those 6 weeks. And then when you were in Iraq, you get paid a different rate for those 8 weeks. Every person is unique in terms of the retirement process. It has to be adjudicated to determine the amount. Do we have any hope of automating? All I'm doing right now is basically.
I think you have to listen to Jim. That's where you re-engineer the system before you automate it, right? Yeah.
But this is all I'm doing now is sort of scanning, to at least have the paper files, turned into electronic format. But how do we get this to? Where would you go? In other words, since this has failed 5 times, the government is, this has been multiple administrations. How would you start this?
It sounds to me like you have an 80-20.
Could have an 80-20 problem. I mean, if you always go
for the 20 or 10% most complex cases and want to start automating those, you'll end up with the most complex system, which is unmanageable, right? It might be a solution to say, think of it like, we talked this morning, like the production line things. You know, you say, I have a mass production line, and it goes like clockwork. It gets 50% of the people. And then I have a specialty line. And then I have something which I'll never be able to automate. You know, and maybe this case that you just described falls into that category. I'm happy with an 18th century process because it takes care of the individual the way it should be taken care of.
I can make you feel a little better.
We have an automated system. And every year after New Year's, the 30-year service ex-CEO secretary calls me from retirement and informs me that she's been thrown out of the retention, the pension system again. And it happens every year.
So we're not alone, good.
No, you're not the only one.
Maybe we don't want to automate it.
Yeah. I think we're... One thing you may also want to consider is that, John, is, you know, how complicated does it have to be? Is there really a reason for all those different buckets,
yeah, maybe
right? Just simplify the process in the beginning, and then applying the, you know, what we just heard.
See, that's where this has got to go. I've got to get the Congress. You know who does those 6 weeks I'm going to pay Afghanistan? It's the Congress, because they want to get the kudos of awarding, oh, we want to recognize this little group. I'm going to try to create, you know, if you want to give, we're going to have two, if you want to give, you really like them, give them this A+. Or give them this B. And try to channel their creative, you know, wanting to be Santa Claus into two buckets, you know. But that's going to be the process reform if we can get there. But
fortunately, in my company, you know, I can get very creative on commission schemes, and sometimes I get carried away. And the people that have to implement to bring me back to earth and say, "Do you really need to do that?" Because it would incur this, and you know, it happens in business. But sometimes we over-engineer. The idea is to bring it down to, what do you really need to do? Simplify. And that would make that process, if you apply some of the rules we just discussed to that, I think you probably have a much easier time.
So we, I think, and where we started, that it was Congress's problem.
Yes, yeah, it's Congress's
problem.
Yeah.
It's never Congress's problem.
It's never Congress's problem. So we're going to, Mike and I are going to sit down and distill this. And I guess we're convening downstairs.
We're convening downstairs at 4 o'clock. And I want to add also, yeah, thank you very much. It goes without saying how valuable this is, the fact that we've just scratched the surface on all of these. And Jeff's going to say it, but I think we're going to ask whether you guys would indulge us for further work going forward. And we'd love it if you would.
Let me add my thank you very much, and we'll see.
Thank you.
We'll see you downstairs.